This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As the 17th International AIDS Conference continues in Mexico City, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reports alarming statistics about the number of new HIV infections in the United States, about the race of the patients, and where they live. The report concludes that 40% more Americans have HIV than previously estimated, that nearly half of those infections are among African Americans, and that the epidemic is worst in the South. High-risk sex and intravenous drug use are cited as the two primary ways the disease spreads, but other factors include poverty, access to health care, stigma, and lack of awareness. Today we talk about who gets AIDS and why. Later in the hour, Middle East analyst and frequent contributor to this program, Rami Khoury, joins us here in Washington this time to talk about the challenges that face his country of residence, Lebanon, and U.S. policy. But first, the HIV-AIDS epidemic. Have you been tested for HIV and why or why not? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also tell us your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with NPR science correspondent Brenda Wilson here with us in Studio 3A. Brenda, always nice to have you on the program.
Hello, Neil.
And we have to begin looking at these statistics by remembering that this is a preventable disease.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's, you know, as the government likes to remind us, you know, that if we give up sex, no, I suppose I should state that the way the government actually states it, if we abstain, unless we know, in fact, whether our partner has been exposed to the virus and are sure of that and know the partner really well, that's probably the best way to prevent or to keep yourself from becoming infected and to use protection. You know, when you're engaged in sex, particularly with a partner that you may not know that well, then you should definitely take precautions. And you should probably, if you're having sex with more than one partner, you should reduce the number of partners. I mean, there are a lot of things you do. Part of it is just thinking about what you do as opposed to, proceeding heedlessly. Yes.
That 40% increase, that's a huge leap from previous estimates.
Right. And we have to keep in mind that this is not necessarily an increase in incidence over time. In other words, this doesn't mean that each year we're getting new infections, 40% new infections of HIV. What it means essentially is that old estimate of 40,000 cases a year of new infections that we thought were happening is actually more like 56,000. And part of that has to do with the development of new technology for going. They went back and they looked at some of those old cases, samples that were taken at the time, and they were able to determine whether those were new infections or old infections. And by comparing that, we're able to establish, I guess, a better trend line, a more accurate trend line, a more sophisticated way of looking at the data and raising the level. You know, it suggests that we've had a sort of stable epidemic that's been at a higher level for some time
than what we thought. And part of that is a new test that enables people to find out, when the infection was
right, how recent it was, whether the new infection occurred within, say, the last 5 months.
Now, also, the information on races, I guess, is not new, but it's still staggering that virtually half the people who contract HIV in 2006, those are the statistics we're talking about, are African-American.
Yes. It's I think we've known for some time that, in fact, infections among African Americans have been going up over time. What's not clear to me, and I am sure you're going to get experts online who can clear this up for me, is whether, in fact, part of that increase among African Americans is because of a decrease in the general population. Yes. So in other words, we have a kind of relatively stable epidemic at this time.
And the percentage of those who get new infections of men who have sex with men, that's also very high, too.
Yes, it is primarily among, I would say about 60%. And if you include about 3% of those are men who also inject drugs and engage in sex with other men. Yes.
There was good news, though, on the prevalence of the disease amongst those who share needles.
Inject drugs. As a matter of fact, it's down by 80%.
80%.
Yes. Part of that may have to do with the fact that some states and locales have been distributing clean needles, making sure that they are available to people, educating people so that they don't share needles. I think we think of people who inject drugs as not being quite conscious or intelligent enough to know how to protect themselves. But in fact, if they are educated, they know not to share needles with each other.
And these other factors that we've heard about, poverty, how does that contribute?
I think part of it has to do with where you live, what's happening where you live, what you know, what your expectations in life are, whether you're conscious all the time of what you're doing, just the degree to which you're sort of, thinking about what's happening to you. I think the impact of being poor, sometimes we don't quite understand the full dimensions of it. What we have to do, who we have to see, who our society or our culture that we operate, the milieu that we operate in, mm-hmm. How much resources. If we live in a poor part of the country, and the South, for example, is one of the poorest regions of the country, less money is spent on these activities, on prevention activities. So
And you were just mentioning the South. That was the regional factor that cropped up in these statistics, that in fact the epidemic is worst in the South.
Yes, and I suppose that reflects the fact also that the epidemic in the United States is highest among African Americans, which has a large African American population in the South. You have to understand also that you're dealing with very conservative attitudes in the South. So if you're a man who has sex with men, you're not going to be very open about that in the South, and you're not going to tell a lot of people. And I think that means that you're not in a good position. When you're not aware, you're less likely to discuss the risk with your partner.
Well, joining us now is Delia Reynolds. She's the chair of the Alabama HIV Prevention Network. She's with us from her office in Dothan, Alabama. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And do those statistics that came out, I guess, over the weekend, do they surprise you?
Not really. We have known that we had an increase number of cases. We sort of knew where the trend was going. In fact, we have the AIDS Southern Coalition, and we have been fighting for more funding because of the numbers of cases we have in the South.
And because of that lack of funding, and I assume access to health care is also a factor?
It is. We have some things in place, but it's never enough. And one of our biggest challenges is transportation. In the rural, and I'm talking about really rural areas of the state, we're located in southeast Alabama, but it's the same except for in larger cities such as Birmingham, Mobile, and Montgomery. There's no public transportation for people to, call a cab or catch a bus to their appointment.
And that obviously, all of that seems to then, snowball. I mean, one factor leads to another leads to another.
That's correct.
And the cultural conservatism that Brenda Wilson was just talking about, that plays a role too?
Yes.
How does that factor in?
Well, I had spoken earlier about the fact that even when we make appointments for a lot of our clients to get into care, many of them do not want to go to the local AIDS service organizations because they don't want to be seen, even though you tell them the people that are there for the same reason. But the stigma, the fear, the denial is so prevalent. It's a prevalent attitude among our clients.
And how do you fight that?
Well, with a lot of reassurance. There's some things you can do. As far as testing, even, some people don't even want to be tested. And there have been times that I've made personal home visits and done testing privately. As far as appointments, if they can get in, if they can afford to see a private physician, then that helps, because when you're at a private doctor's office, nobody's going to know why you're there.
Would it help if the minister, the mayor, or the governor, if they publicly took the test?
I don't know, because there are people in high places that are positive, but that is kept a secret, So I don't think that would really make a difference, because it's not, those are not the people that they align themselves with.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thanks very much.
You're quite welcome.
Delia Reynolds is chair of the Alabama HIV Prevention Network. She was with us from her office in Dothan, Alabama. We're asking our callers today, our listeners, have you been tested and why or why not? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's turn to Carl. Carl's with us on the line from Philadelphia. Carl?
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
All right, you're on the air.
Okay.
Have you been tested?
I have. I've been tested twice in the last 2 years, one for blood work for a new position that I was getting, and one because I was entering a relationship, and the girl wanted me to get a test.
And that was no problem?
No, there wasn't a problem. It's just that I never thought of this actually being a part of my life. I just always thought of this being, I mean, I'm 30 years old, and this happened to be 1986, 1987 through maybe 1991. There was just so much education. It was so in the media and all over the place. And none of my friends have AIDS, but I knew people back then, but nobody recently. So it's just I didn't think it would actually touch me at all.
And in this odd way, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for the call.
You got it.
And Carl, well, he didn't seem to have any stigma about it at all, and these tests should be routine.
He did say he was in Pennsylvania. I also think that the other thing that has changed is that, I mean, as he mentioned, in 86 through 91, it was just a much wider discussion of HIV in the country generally. I think one of the things that the CDC moved to do, and I'm not sure it was the best approach or not, and one could question it, is that it targeted prevention. I mean, if you know that it's certain groups that are more at risk, then focusing in those groups, taking the message to those communities. But I think in the same way, you could possibly being isolating people and, in a certain sense, stigmatizing them. They might feel stigmatized, even if they're not, by even directing or targeting prevention messages at them. And funding for prevention, I might add, has come down.
NPR Science correspondent Brenda Wilson will stay with us. We're talking about who gets AIDS and why. If you're a medical worker that treats HIV/AIDS patients, who is getting treatment? 800-989-8255. Also, have you been tested and why or why not? Send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. We'll get a doctor's perspective in just a moment. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This week, some of the world's top AIDS researchers and activists are gathered in Mexico City to talk about the latest in treatment and prevention and the challenges in the fight against HIV/AIDS. The latest numbers here in this country are startling. Infection rates depend on your race, income, even where you live. Today, we're talking about who gets AIDS and why. NPR Science Desk correspondent Brenda Wilson is here with us in Studio 3A. As always, you're welcome to join us. Have you been tested for HIV and why or why not? 800-989-8255 is the phone number. The email address is talk@npr.org. You can also tell us your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's talk with Monica, and Monica's on the line with us from Macon in Georgia.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, Monica. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I am an African-American female. I live, obviously, in the South. You called out where I live. I have not been tested. I am in a committed monogamous relationship. However, the reason I've not tested is because for some reason I am HIV positive. I don't want to have to deal with the insurance companies and, you know, possibly not being able to get any further coverage.
You're frightened of the repercussions.
Exactly.
Not so much
the social stigma, just the repercussions, as you stated.
But that would also mean you might have it and not know.
Right. Correct.
Is this something that you and your partner talk about?
No, it is something that I think about just because, you know, you like to be aware of things. But no, we don't openly discuss it.
Because I think one of the things that it really is important and that we need to sort of normalize in terms of how we think about relating to each other and discussing sex and, you know, I remember in the 80s there was this whole notion of eroticizing the discussion. It just sort of becomes a part of the sexual play, in a sense, discussing it. I mean, is there some concern that it's a the implication is that one or the both of you may be not quite faithful to each other?
There's always that possibility, you know, and perhaps maybe I don't want to know, because then that would be confirmation that, you know, my partner has been unfaithful.
What about the fact that if you did test and that meant you would get treatment early and that, you know, that you're protecting your health as well?
That is something to consider, and I am what most people would call an educated woman. However, just emotionally, I guess spiritually, that is just something that I've chosen not to want to deal with.
All right. And are you already insured?
Oh, yes.
Well, because I was about to say, there are laws in the U.S. There is an Americans with Disability Act, and I'm not quite sure they could kick you off of your insurance if you turned up HIV positive. It is a manageable condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't want to tie up too much time here, but I know how it is because, you know, I also have high blood pressure, and so, you know, I can't get life insurance. You know, so that's just something else that prevents. So if for some reason I lose my current coverage, you know, that would definitely be a huge factor in whether or not I get coverage again.
I just want to offer reassurance, I suppose, to other listeners as well. There are support programs for people who test positive. I mean, there are programs specifically directed to them as well.
Right, and we do have organizations here in our hometown that, you know, they offer anonymous testing, anonymous private testing here where we live. So, but it's just a really, really, to me, it's an emotional type thing that you would have to deal with if I made the decision to be tested, because I just don't really want to know.
Could I just suggest one thing? Look up a group in Georgia called Sister Sister. If you want to get in touch with me, Brenda Wilson, I'll tell you how to get in touch with them. And they just talk about some of the issues that women have to deal with, many of the things that you're talking about now. And it's in Georgia. I think it's in the Atlanta region. But I think they may have sort of rural chapters as well.
And we'll ask Brenda to list that information on our website. So just go after the show's over, go to npr.org/talk, and we'll have the information up there as soon as the show as possible. Monica, thanks very much. Good luck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Dr. Robert Johnson is a professor and interim chair of pediatrics at the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, New Jersey Medical School, and he treats HIV-positive teenagers in New Jersey. He joins us now from his office in Newark, and it's nice to have you on the program today.
Good afternoon.
And what do you perceive as the reasons people, particularly young people, get infected with HIV these days?
Well, most of it is just because young people are having sex without any form of protection, and we have a fairly large number of young people in our program who are HIV infected. All of them have had sex with someone who's HIV infected themselves, and then they acquire the infection. One of the things that was a perception that we had years ago was that it had a lot to do with how much sex you had. It's really much more who you have sex with. Because if you have a lot of unprotected sex with people who are not HIV infected, you'll never get HIV. But if you have sex with a very few people who are HIV infected, you will get HIV. Now, among teens, that usually means sex with an older person, sex with an adult, since there's more HIV in the adult population than in the teen population. But that's what it amounts to. There's almost no transmission from intravenous drug use among teenage populations, but it's all sexual activity.
We were just discussing the stigma of even getting tested with a caller. Does that play into a factor as well?
Well, you know, it and I've heard that from around the country. It really depends upon where you are. In Newark, we've made a concerted effort over the last 15 years to test as many teenagers as possible. And so throughout New Jersey, we pretty much normalize testing, and so that whenever you go and get a physical examination as a youth, usually you get HIV tested as well. And at least the young people we see in Newark have that expectation that when they go in for an STD or STI test, they'll be also HIV tested. So we don't have that much difficulty with stigma. In our general adolescent clinics, we routinely ask young people if they're sexually active. We ask them whether they're sexually active with people the same sex as they or the opposite sex, and we do complete STI testing as well as HIV testing, and that's sort of an expectation.
And Brett Brenda, I assume that varies community to community, state to state.
It does vary, but the CDC has recommended that states put in place routine testing programs so that anytime you go, say, to an emergency room, the person has to say, I don't want to be tested, or they will be tested.
And that's the way it works in New Jersey?
I'm not sure how many states have done that. It's just a recommendation,
yeah,
however.
Well, in New York and New Jersey, those are two states I'm most familiar with. There are moves to do that. In New Jersey, the Commissioner of Health has recommended that. And, you know, it varies by hospital or by practice whether it's being done. I doubt that most physicians or health centers are doing it, but at least they are discussing it. I also chair the Governor's Council on HIV and AIDS, and we've recommended that throughout the state as well. And one of the reasons it's really important is that most people who are found to be HIV infected have had a recent visit to a health care provider in the past during which they probably were HIV infected, and they didn't have a test. And we know that it's really important to learn about your HIV status as early as possible, and therefore it's important that the medical community test everybody. And that's testing without any consideration of relative risk or anything like that, but everyone should be tested between 13 and 65.
Now let's get a caller on the line, and this is Demery, is that right?
It's Demery.
Demery, okay. Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Go ahead, please.
Well, I am 30 now, and I've been getting tested since I was 18, but I also grew up in California, and I just think that education has a huge amount to do with that, and I'm not seeing quite as much in my younger peers. And it's kind of something where I've gone with friends, so there's really not a big deal about it, and I am negative to date, and that's, I guess, all I have to say about that is I think there's a difference education-wise. That's all.
From California to North Carolina?
That's true. Through Ohio.
Okay.
One of the other things that's different today is the rapid test. And one of the problems we have with HIV testing initially was that you had to get the test and wait for about 2 weeks before you got the result. Now you can receive a result in anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes. And that then cuts down on the number of people who are HIV infected and don't know it. It also gives you the opportunity to immediately get involved in some treatment program.
Thanks very much for the call, Demery.
You're welcome.
Here's an email from Laura in Oklahoma. I live in Oklahoma, and I try to get tested yearly. I do live in the Bible Belt, and there is a lot of stigma. I try to get my friends to go with me to try to get rid of that stigma. One problem I found is a lack of knowledge. There's no advertising to let people know where to get tested in our area. And I wonder, Dr. Johnson, do you think that would be a factor?
I'm sorry, didn't he have the last part of the question?
The part of the question is people don't know where to go to get tested.
That's real important. And I know one of the things that we do in the New York, New Jersey area is there's a lot of public advertising about where to get tested. There are campaigns to encourage people to get tested. And I have heard from some of my friends in the South that's a real problem. The CDC recommendations are that whenever you have a health care contact, you should have the opportunity to be tested. And that sort of removes that necessity to find someplace. When you go to your doctor to get your checkup, you go to your doctor for a call, your doctor should have the opportunity to be tested there. And any laboratory can do the test now. It's not any commercial laboratory or hospital laboratory. It's not a very difficult test to do. And so it would remove the problem if we had testing more available to routine healthcare facilities.
Let's talk with Michael. Michael with us from North Wildwood in New Jersey, down on the shore.
Hi, how's it going? I just wanted to tag along with the other caller said about education. And I have not been tested, but I'm the president of an organization at the University of Delaware that sponsors free testing. And I think that it's just so important that people become educated and aware of the problems. And I think the reason that I kind of was driven to this and wanted to learn as much as I can about it was because I had a family member, an uncle, who died of AIDS. And to this day, the stigma in my family is just it's pretty awful. So
and yet you haven't been tested yourself.
Unfortunately not. I know I should. I've given blood, so I know that they do tell you if you have any diseases you need to be worried about, because they do test for that. So I'm fairly certain I don't. And Yes, I know. I should go get from a person who advocates getting tested for AIDS. I have not been tested, and mostly it has to do with because I've led a pretty I believe a safe, have not had multiple sexual partners, anything like that.
I guess one of the things I would like to ask Dr. Johnson in reference to what the callers just said, I mean, I think we have a lot of worried well in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
True. I mean, everyone runs a risk of being exposed to someone who's HIV positive if they have unprotected sex. While on the other hand, it's a relative risk.
Right.
And how do you kind of, I think if you communicate everybody's at risk,
mm-hmm.
that at some point people turn you off. I keep thinking there's a better way to communicate risk to people.
Well, you're right. And one of the things we've learned is what I said earlier. It's not how much sex you have. It's who you have sex with. And in the United States, the epidemic is primarily spread sexually through men who have sex with men. And either from those men to women or from those men to other men. And a decreasing amount of the disease is spread by intravenous drug use, although it's still a very important route of spread. And you know, it's a difficult thing to a fine line. We don't want to tell people that they don't need to be tested. They don't need to worry about this disease or any other disease. They need to worry about HIV as well as all the other sexually transmitted infections. But they don't need to have the fear that's associated with it. And I think that in addition to stigma, the reluctance to test is also fear. And that's what I find in most of the young people I see, because the question is, what happens if I do have it? Then I'm going to die, and I don't want to know I'm going to die. And that's a very important message we haven't really gotten out there, because the treatment of HIV today is very different than it was even 5 years ago. For most newly infected individuals, if you need treatment at all, the treatment is one pill a day.
Yeah.
And that one pill a day will turn this into a chronic illness that should never make you sick.
Michael, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. We're talking about AIDS, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email from a listener who asked that we not identify her or where she's writing from. I was tested because I found out that my husband of 20 years was having an affair with a drug addict. Thank goodness I was not positive for HIV or any other STD. Take-home lesson, even though you think you were in a monogamous relationship, you might not be. And that's another thing to bear in mind. Let's talk with, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your name.
Dodosio,
there you go, in Oakland, California.
Yes, that's right. Thank you very much for receiving my call. I'm part of the team that delivered the Get Screened Oakland campaign to Oakland. And the thing that I want to talk about is the reason why we have so much stigma and why there's so much power given to stigma. And it's really simple. We are not talking about HIV from the places of traditional leadership in our communities, such as churches, schools, and community centers. So my position is that churches have to take a stronger role in talking about this issue from the pulpit in order to engage the masses and overcome this notion of stigma.
Brenda Wilson, I know you've done some reporting on this.
Yes, and having done some reporting, and I'll be happy for Dr. Johnson to correct me, we've been talking about churches getting into this since I've been covering this issue, which is the mid-1980s. And my sense of it is, don't wait for that to happen. I'm not sure that that's an expectation that's going to be fulfilled. I think it has to be a wider conversation everywhere. The larger society needs to assume more responsibility. It should not be hidden away. It should be talked about in classes. It should be part of our education at schools, in spite of the fact that I realize throughout the country, a lot of states are resistant to that idea as well. I think this conversation needs to be normalized. It should not be so specialized that it's only black people who need to hear it. Everybody needs to hear it, and it needs to be reinforced. I'm not going to wait for the churches to do it. I don't expect them to do it.
I think you're right, Brenda. I don't even think that the churches getting involved in this conversation will significantly change things when it comes to stigma. I think people will always be afraid of this illness. The illness will always carry some a type of negative aspect to it. But the diseases tend to change as we have a greater ability to handle it. Syphilis was looked at this way back at the turn of the last century when there was no treatment available for that. And when we reach a point where we have an immunization for HIV, when we have effective treatments for HIV, it will be looked at differently.
I just wanted to insert this one email of Anonymous. One can increase the anonymity of AIDS testing greatly by ordering and submitting the test by mail, which is how I did it. This emailer wrote, the person I was seeing, and I sent blood samples in and gave each other out to codes to use when calling in the results. That way we each got our own and each other's testing results directly from the testing lab. So there's another alternative. Brenda Wilson, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
And Dr. Robert Johnson, appreciate your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
And Dr. Robert Johnson joined us from his office in Newark, New Jersey. Coming up, a conversation with Rami Khoury. This is NPR News.